Well, Sri Lankan-born Australian novelist Michelle de Kretser has combined her two homelands in her new novel, Questions of Travel. In her book, characters and stories travel the globe, finding both beauty and tragedy. There's Laura, who travels from Sydney and her dysfunctional family out into the world and then back. And there's Ravi, who comes to Australia as a refugee from Sri Lanka. Michelle de Kretser is a writer who resists the autobiographical. Her work ranges across countries and historical periods, from 18th century France to contemporary Australia, Ceylon in the 1930s to Naples in the 1980s. So what then is driving this story of travellers over the last few decades? Here's Kate Evans to introduce us to Michelle de Kretser.
I spoke to Michelle de Kretser about her novel Questions of Travel in a bookshop crammed with people in Brisbane. This is a book with many stories, guidebooks, maps and characters. So here's the author to introduce one of her characters and to take Laura on the road.
So I'm just going to read a little bit from the novel, from an early part of the novel, which is set in the 1980s. And Laura, who is one of the two main characters, is a young woman in her 20s and she's left home, which is Sydney, and is travelling around the world, as young Australians do, and she's in India. She climbed into an auto rickshaw outside the bus station in Pondicherry and gave the driver the name of the guest house she had chosen. "Oh, yes, madam, number 11. Thinking he had misunderstood, Laura repeated the name. "Yes, madam," he said over his shoulder, "number 11, Lonely Planet." Laura consulted the map in the traveller's Bible. The guest house was the 11th item in the key. In a gloomy coffee house in Thanjavur, she ordered prudently milkless tea. Courting couples had sought refuge in the adjoining booths, where they nestled with decorum. A waiter making passes at Laura's table with a filthy rag inquired where Madame was from. When she told him, "Dean Jones," he murmured. Laura had arrived in India not knowing this deity and had quickly been enlightened. "David Boone," she replied. "Merv Hughes." "Alan Border." And she politely added, "Kapil Dev." "Oh, Kapil Dev," he repeated, eyes aglow. This ritual satisfied, he asked how long she was staying. "Oh, she was leaving the next day," said Laura. "I'm going on to Madurai and to Kanyakumari after that." "Then Kovalam and Trivandrum," he supplied, "and backwater boat trip and Alleppey and Cochin." "But how do you know?" cried Laura. She had spent pleasurable hours putting together her itinerary from guidebooks and maps. He was equally astonished. "All the tourists are going there, madam."
Michelle, in this reading as well, you foregrounded the maps and the borders and the movements. And, of course, you foregrounded that by calling the novel Questions of Travel. But you could have called it Questions of Love or Questions of Children or of Technology or Garden or maybe even Questions of Grief. So yes. I wondered why you decided to define it by travel.
Well, partly because I just stole the title from Elizabeth Bishop, whose magnificent poem, Questions of Travel, I've known for a long time and loved. And I guess although the novel covers a whole lot of different ground, travel is the thing that all the characters have in common, all the main characters anyway, whether it's Laura, who is an avid traveller, or her friend Theo in London, who doesn't really like travelling and who says, "I prefer the beaten track," and, you know, likes to stay home. Or Ravi, the other main character, whose travel is in the form of flight, really. He comes to Australia to seek asylum. Or there are immigrants in the book as well, and that is another kind of travel. So I guess travel was the thing that brought people, that united all the characters. Because travel is a way of writing about the modern world.
One of the things that really struck me about this book was that I kept on interrupting my reading to write down lines from it that I didn't want to forget because they were so striking. And one of them was Laura says, "This was travel, marvellous and sad." Why both of those things?
Oh, well, I guess that as Laura is a tourist at that point, and, well, the marvels of travel, I think, are self-evident, all that it throws up in terms of wonderful sights and experiences. But also, I have the feeling often when travelling through places as a tourist that I am strangely disconnected from reality, from the lives of the people in those places. Because as a tourist, you're often sealed off in a bubble of language or privilege, and you have no real purpose apart from enjoying yourself, which is, you know, very pleasant. But it seems to have not much to do with what is going on, with what is important to the people whose lives you are just passing through.
But in Ravi's childhood, there's a map on the schoolroom that means something very particular to him. Can you tell us about that map as a way to tell us about Ravi?
Oh, well, the map on Ravi's schoolroom wall is unrolled by his geography teacher, and it shows Sri Lanka. And it's very tiny. Sri Lanka is like this tiny little drop, like a little pearl that's fallen off India's ear. And these children sitting in this classroom look at this map and, you know, their world is their world. It is full and complete and teeming with incident and story. And they look at the map and it is a speck. And if it disappeared, no one would notice. But this is their life. And one of the things the map does is inspire in Ravi a desire to know that great big world outside his tiny homeland.
Ravi marries young. His wife Malini is politically active. She's a passionate character, concerned especially for the plight of women during this turbulent period in Sri Lanka's history.
I was very aware that I left Sri Lanka before, well before the outbreak of the war, and I didn't feel I could make Malini the other main character or someone like Malini. So Ravi is quite apolitical, really. He doesn't want to be drawn in, and he hears about what's going on in the country, you know, through the media, through rumour, through the stories that Malini tells him, which is a bit of the way I heard about the war. I mean, obviously, he's living there. It's more a direct presence in his life. But, I mean, I couldn't really imagine what it would have been like to be deeply politically committed and engaged in those events. So that's why I made Malini. She's an important character, but she's not the main character.
But she's a very vivid character. She's an incredibly attractive, dynamic character, and she's so strongly drawn, and their child is so beautiful that at various points I could hardly bear to keep reading with the sense that something terrible was going to happen.
Yes, well, I don't want to say too much about that, but Sri Lanka doesn't, unfortunately, have a good record where human rights are concerned. I'll just leave it at that, I think. It's not a book about the Sri Lankan Civil War. It's really about what happens to someone who is on the fringes of it. What I wanted to do with Ravi was explore this question of travel. So what happens when Ravi becomes, well, when he flees Sri Lanka and comes to Australia as an asylum seeker?
And one of the striking things was the sort of offhand way in which he's misunderstood. People keep asking him how long he spent in a camp.
Ravi comes into Australia on a plane, so he's not locked up because asylum seekers who apply for asylum after they get here aren't put into detention. It's part of the government strategy to distinguish between boat people and plane people and to punish plane people, boat people, all the more strongly by locking them up so they distinguish between the two groups. And therefore, I think because the headlines, rightly draw attention to the tragedies of that various boat people have had and the terrible conditions in the detention centres. But what happens is that, of course, when Ravi tells people, when people find out that Ravi is a refugee, they say, well, how long did you spend? You know, where were you in detention? How long were you locked up for? I mean, these are people who are sympathetic. They're very, you know, kind people. And when he says, but I wasn't in detention, then some people think that perhaps he isn't a real refugee, that there's something slightly, you know, sus about him. He's pretending to be one. So the novel, there is a kind of underground theme of what is real and what is not real and the search for authenticity, which can be quite absurd at times. So it can be comic, it can be tragic.
Well, and given that this is a novel, so it's all about narrative, it seems to me that you're making that storytelling problematic because people want him to offer up the story.
Yes.
They want him to tell how he became a refugee, what happened to him, and he doesn't have to, and he never does.
I think Ravi really can't talk about still what has happened to him. And I think this is quite a common symptom of, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder that people are, I mean, soldiers, this is a classic thing that happens to soldiers. They are unable to talk about what they have seen.
I'm all for believing, I'm all for believing.
And, of course, the book takes place in many places. Yes. We go to Naples, we travel to India, and then there's Sydney, which you describe as a pointillist painting of leisure and democracy.
Oh, yes. I have on the wall in my study a print of that famous Seurat painting. I'm sure you all know it, of the riverbank and the Seine and the people kind of, you know, 19th century, the man in the bowler hat and the little dog. And I moved to Sydney in the middle of writing this book. And there's just really something, maybe you have it in Brisbane too, but I moved up from Melbourne, which is, you know, kind of people frolicking on headlands and having picnics. And this is not what immediately comes to mind with Melbourne. It's more sort of people in black coats walking quickly down a street. And I love that sense of, just kind of, you know, warmth.
But that's something that came through what I described in some ways as a sad book. But there's also a really strong sense of beauty and liveliness. And for me, the way that you described the sort of zing of Naples and the sort of grime under the fingernails of Naples was very similar to the way that you described Sydney. So it helps temper the hard stuff. And I wondered how self-conscious that was.
You know, life is marvellous and sad. And I was very aware of that. Perhaps the beauty thing, I mean, again, and I wrote the Naples section too after I had moved up to Sydney, but it is also one of the most beautiful places on earth. And I still think that every time I see that harbour, I find myself smiling. It is just gorgeous. It's drop-dead gorgeous. And I did want to write about kind of the beauty of the world, which Sydney reminds you of forcefully, as a way of saying, well, you know, there is all this as well.
And because we see a lot of that through Laura's eyes, it helps keep her an interesting and lively figure, even though so many other people judge her in a slightly odd way. They don't always see that sort of sense of beauty that she carries with her.
Yes, well, I think Laura is always slightly an outsider, even when she comes back to Sydney later on in the book. she has lived away for so long that she doesn't really feel quite at... I mean, she's at home and she's not at home, and she comes from this very dysfunctional family. So in a way, that search for emotional connection is still going on even though she's back home.
Oh, the flame trees reply the weary driver, and there's nothing else could set fire to this town.
One of the things I like about novels is that they invite us to enter the lives of other people imaginatively, which is surely what we are on earth to do, really. And Ravi, in a sense, becomes a kind of symbol of that he doesn't speak his story, but he's an invitation to imagine what has happened to him.
Kate Evans speaking with Michelle de Kretzer in Brisbane, and her book is called Questions of Travel. It's published by Allen and Unwin.